Hello and welcome to this week's Boxing News podcast, The Opening Bell. I'm Boxing News editor Tris Dixon, joined by my trusty sidekick, Matt Christie. Matt, how's it going this week?
Yes, not too bad. Got a bit of a back and arm and shoulder issue going on, which put me out of action for half of yesterday. But hopefully I'm on the mend.
A bit looser today.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
I understand you went for a massage in Soho.
I went to Soho.
Is that how you injured it?
I couldn't. I don't get paid well enough for massages in Soho. But yeah, I went to a walk-in clinic in Soho, an NHS walk-in clinic.
All right.
I hasten to add.
Good. Okay. All right. So let's get right down to it. We're off the back of a weekend where there were some marvellous scraps in Texas. Top of the bill, Andre Berto against Jesus Soto Carras. Big upset, really, because Soto Carras has come good on the biggest night of his life, really.
Yeah, it's not a major upset, but it's certainly one of the biggest shocks of the year so far, I think, because of the way Berto had been going. He hadn't looked good for a while. Soto Carras was on a bit of an upturn after beating Selko Kadin. And full credit to him, really. Thoroughly deserved the wins. Seemed to be bossing it more or less on and off from the start, and finished it well.
Berto's crashed and burned now. Do you think that's it for him at the highest level?
I think at the highest level, I think it's difficult because he always, as we mentioned, I think we've mentioned a couple of times actually, he's won a world title. He achieved a few successful defences. You know, for 99.99% of fighters, that's so much more. But he dreamed of being up there with the Mayweathers, the Pacquiao's, and the realization that that's never going to happen now is probably going to be tough for him to rebuild.
Not sure that Berto ever had the right fights to go from being a prospect to a contender. I think he went from prospect to champion too quickly without that kind of grounding that he needed beforehand.
Yeah, no, I agree. I can't remember who he beat to win the title, but he certainly seemed to, when he stepped, I think he won the title, I think he won a vacant title, and then when he started moving in with the likes of Juan Yarango and Luis Collazo, he looked like he was really, really struggling at that level, and it was a jump, and then by the time he was going in with the likes of Victor Ortiz and what have you, then I think it was perhaps too late.
Yeah.
But this result still, you know, I'm looking at it on a page now, and it's still a surprise that Carras, with all due respect, beat Andre Berto.
But obviously, full credit to Soto Carras, who's now in that brilliant mix of welterweights, of guys who could produce so many superb fights. I mean, imagine him with Josecito Lopez, Marcus Maidana, someone like that.
I think if he stays in that kind of level, then yeah, certainly it's going to be very entertaining fights, but someone tweeted me yesterday, I think I put something out there about who's going to be next for Floyd Mayweather, presuming he gets past Saul Alvarez, and somebody said, well, it's going to be Soto Carras because, you know, he's beat Berto, and the last two guys that beat Berto then got a shot at Mayweather. I would have absolutely no interest in Soto Carras against Mayweather, but stick him in with an excitement-minded fighter, and I think, yeah, we could have a good fight.
I think you talk about the Mayweather stakes, and obviously this week or next week, to the readers, we're actually working on a feature with Sal Alvarez and Floyd Mayweather, looking at that fight in depth, and I'm on a panel with Dan Raphael and Larry Merchant, I think, which should be interesting reading. But I think looking at Alvarez, or looking beyond Alvarez, if we can just for a minute, which obviously is dangerous in many respects. But, I mean, to look past him, we've got Lucas Matisse in the magazine this week calling out Floyd Mayweather. Amir Khan, who's just split from his manager, Asif Valley, looking at a Floyd Mayweather fight. So it wouldn't surprise me, should Mayweather get by Alvarez, if his two dates next year are against Matisse and Khan.
Yeah, and if Khan looks good, if Khan beats Alexander, which is a big if.
That's a big if too.
But if he does and he looks good in doing so, then yeah, I'd be up for seeing Khan against Mayweather. But I think the interesting one there would be, say, if Matisse walks through Danny Garcia, then you've got a massive fight there.
Yeah.
Massive fight with Mayweather.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I mean, we haven't heard who Khan's going to have as his manager moving forwards. Obviously, there's a growing trend with a lot of fighters to sign up with Al Haymon, the very influential manager, who, funnily enough, also has Lucas Matisse, who he signed leading into the Lemon-Peterson fight. So, I mean, if Al Heyman's got the guys on lockdown, hasn't he? Matisse could well be in with a shout of fighting Mayweather if he comes through, or if they both come through their respective fights.
Yeah, definitely. And it wouldn't surprise me to see if Khan went that way, because I think he's proven that he will get the right opportunities for his fighters. And Khan's made no secret of that. That's his ultimate target, isn't it? A fight against Floyd Mayweather.
Mm. Keith Thurman was also on the Texas bill in San Antonio. Beat Diego Chavez, stopped him with body shots or stopped him late in the fight. Thurman, have you been impressed with him thus far in his career?
I have been impressed with him. I don't think he's a second coming, but he's going along and he's doing the things that he should do at this point in his career. You can kind of draw parallels with the kind of promise that surrounds him that was with Berto, really. But whereas Thurman now is going up through the ranks, he doesn't seem to be having the amount. Although the Chavez fight was a tough fight for it, for sure. He didn't look like he was going to lose that fight. I think he's making the right noises and he's making progress, which is all you can ask for him at this point.
Yeah. Now, although Thurman, like you say, is making progress, and although we called Soto Carras and Berto one of the year's big shocks so far, those fights really took second fiddle to what was an absolute war between Omar Figueroa and Nahito Arakawa. Easy for me to say. And, I mean, it's another fight of the year contender in an awesome year of big fights. I mean, what's the front runner for you so far?
I was thinking about this the other day. I think it's still probably Bradley Provodnikov for me. But there's so many. I can't remember a year in recent memory where, I mean, we're getting to a point now where we could almost list 20, well, I think, which would be legitimate contenders to be named as the best of the year.
I think it might have been last year. Weren't we scratching around till about November?
Yeah, yeah.
And then we got Pacquiao Marquez, but we were scratching around for a long time. It was either last year or the year before, and there was just nothing around, and there was a few good ones at the end.
Yeah.
But this year's been, you know, if the year was to end now, we'd already be in a very good position to do a top 10.
Definitely, yeah, yeah. I mean, and
they've all had different qualities, haven't they?
Yeah, they all have. They all have. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, even fight, you know, Kessler, Froch 2 was brilliant. You know, we were lucky enough to be there. Watching it back on the television wasn't quite as exciting as some of the other fights that I've seen on television this year. But the atmosphere there was incredible. I would be surprised if there was a better atmosphere anywhere in the world for this year. But yeah, all different. And the those guys that kind of are getting Sky and more specifically are getting Box Nation have been lucky enough to see these fights. And that's only a recent phenomenon, really, that all the fans are getting to see these. I remember when, as I was growing up, and I remember as in the early years of being an adult, you just did not have the opportunity to see these fights.
I think one thing that people in Britain don't perhaps take for granted, is that in America as well, these one-off pay-per-views are $60.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so to get three or four of those in a year, or in a short space of time for either £10 or even your amount that you pay for Sky, we don't do too badly over in this country.
No, definitely. Full credit to Box Nation for what they've done for bringing the fights. Because again, this whole bill on Saturday, from start to finish, was a stunner, wasn't it? Really, couldn't have asked for any more.
Let me just run a few fights by you this year, and just sort of give me a brief overview of what you recall of them. Dennis Lebedev, Guillermo Jones.
Oh, violent, wasn't it? Yeah, I mean that's. Perhaps I can't think of a worse injury in modern boxing than that one.
Have you seen the Vladichuk-Chakayev fight?
Yeah.
Yeah, what did you make of that?
Again, I mean, it was pretty violent stuff, wasn't it? it's strange, isn't it?
Answer.
Strange, isn't it? Boxing and violence going hand in hand so frequently in this conversation.
Well, yeah, sometimes that's not the case, is it? But I mean, obviously we have Rios Alvarado as well, which many people thought overtook Bradley Provodnikov as a front runner, but I think now people lean towards Provodnikov and Bradley a little bit more because it was an unexpected
fight,
wasn't it?
I think that was it. I mean, it's difficult. I mean, how do you judge these fights? Do you judge them On your impressions when you were first viewing, do they stand up to repeated viewings? I think if you used to go back and watch Bradley Provodnikov now, knowing the result, knowing what happened when, it may not be as pleasing a spectacle as Rios Alvarado. But going into Rios Alvarado, anybody that knew their salt knew that was going to be a decent fight.
I think what really excites me about this year, I mean, this could be the year of the fight of the year, couldn't it?
Yeah.
You know, we've got Lucas Matisse against Danny Garcia on the Mayweather bill. We've got Provodnikov, who's back out against Mike Alvarado later
in the
year.
I'm excited about that one.
I mean, that's got train wreck written all over it. What else? So there's a couple more. Obviously, domestically, we've got Derry Matthews and Curtis Woodhouse.
I like that one. I like that one.
An absolute gem, couldn't it? And then there's obviously fights like Ryder and Billy Joe Saunders. Frankie Gavin has got more to come this year. I mean, there's some cracking domestic stuff as well, isn't there?
Yeah, it's been a really, really good year.
Hey, Fury could be dramatic, couldn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly, exactly. You know, you've still got Froch Groves coming up as well. It's been a really, really good year. And the way it's going to close as well with those, you know, with Hay Fury, with Froch Groves in this country.
Pacquiao Rios as
well. Then you've got Pacquiao Rios, you've got Mayweather, Alvarado, elsewhere in the world. What else really? All of these fights are going to be seen, are going to be available to everybody in Great Britain. What else can you ask for as a boxing fan, really?
Be a Marco Huck fight kicking about the second half of the year as well.
Always rely on Marco Huck for a good fight, can't you?
A few thrills and spills, definitely. So, I mean, it was a cracking show overall in Texas. I mean, there's been a couple of beauties because the whole show a few weeks ago had a few crackers on it as well. So, a couple of five-star shows for us.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is good. Yuri Foreman fought over the weekend. Interested?
I don't think Jack Obermeyer was he?
He was disgusted at being made to cover that fight, to be honest. What's interesting to me at the moment, and I know he's going to be very raw, and I'm not saying he's going to be the next great heavyweight, and we can talk a bit about heavyweights in a bit, but Lucas Brown, this Australian fighter, notched another win, climbed off the deck to beat Travis Walker. I mean, it looks like whether this Lucas Brown is the next big thing, or I don't know. I'm not convinced that he would be. Certainly looks like he's going to be in some fun fights, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, I saw Lucas Brown when he was with the Hattons over here, and I think I saw him a couple of times.
He's still with the Hattons now, but just over there.
Right, okay. But yeah, when he was fighting over here, and I saw him in Bolton, I think, and possibly Manchester, but yeah, he's got that raw power, which, you know, if you're going to in that division, it's one of the necessities. And no, I'm not convinced that he's going to go on to trouble the Klitschkos or anything like that. But as you say, it's going to be fun to find out how far he gets. And certainly, again, you know, Travis Walker, solid gatekeeper. By all accounts, he kind of ran out of gas. But it's a good result for Brown. It's a good result for Brown.
William Hill, sponsors of the Opening Bell podcast. Bet £25 and get a £25 bet free. Bet now with williamhill.com.
Of course, Ricky, you know, we got pictures of Ricky Hatton holding the pads for Lucas Brown. And, you know, Ricky's very familiar with holding the pads for heavy hitters now, isn't he?
Yeah, I believe he was. I think Ivan Drago came over to Manchester, didn't he? He's been talking about a comeback.
Well, you know, there was all that talk about the Creed follow-up for the Rockies. I thought, let's bring. Well,
that's
Drago
Rocky
back.
7, isn't it? So also in the pipeline is Rocky 8, the return of Drago. But yeah, no, joking apart, that was you. But it's the first thing that I thought of when I saw the photographs from that, and it's. It's up on our website now, the actual footage of when Hatton met Drago.
Yeah, I mean, there's a big feature coming in the magazine, not this week, but next week. I was up at a workshop with Ricky Hatton at the Hatton Health and Fitness Gym at the Academy, and I was put through my paces on the pads and doing some technique work and doing the most ghastly circuit I've ever done, or certainly I've done in a long, long time. And my cardio fitness isn't where it should have been because I'm just recovering from a pretty serious knee injury. And so I jumped back in with both feet and it nearly killed me. And then just about 12 hours later, just had enough time to go and interview Ryan Burnett and pop over to Ricky's for spot a dinner. I was up at first thing in the morning. I went to the gym and did a leg workout with the Furies, Tyson and Huey. And Peter Fury was good enough to take me on the pads for a little bit there as well. So
yeah, but that's just what you needed, wasn't it?
Just about finished me off. I was just pleased I had a 5-hour drive home afterwards, really, because it gave me a chance to sit down for a little bit and reflect.
Yeah, I mean, we've put it out there on Twitter, and one of the first things that came back was perhaps a little something you may want to respond to about that perhaps you're juicing due to your impressive physique and technique on the pads. Do you have anything to say to that?
Very little, apart from no, of course not. You know, it costs a lot of money, and I don't have much money. B, I mean, why would I do it? I don't compete or do anything like that anymore, so it's unnecessary. C, you know, I do look after my body, so I wouldn't put anything that I think would harm it into it. And D, I've just trained hard for, I don't know, since I was 15 or 16 now, so getting on for the best part of 20 years. So you suppose after 20 years you should have some average results to fall back on, I suppose. But I do get that actually sometimes, and my other half has been asked recently if I do. It is what it is. I don't know, there's not really much I can say about it really, but no, I definitely don't, and nor would I recommend it. In fact, you know, one of the reasons why actually I like to stay in shape is I could never imagine being a boxing writer who can call someone overweight or lazy if I was overweight or lazy myself. And it's just, you know, it's really come from that as well, that, you know, I like to be in half decent nick, because if I have to pull someone up about their condition, then who am I to do that if I'm not even looking after myself? And that's a personal thing. That's not a shot at any other boxing writers. You know, that's just me. So yeah, but I had a great time up there with the Hattons and the Furies. Tyson, we just caught Tyson. I went up there with a photographer, Mark Robinson, and we just caught Tyson in the morning before he left for Belgium for his training camp. They left at 3 p.m. and I don't think they're going to be back for 8 or 9 weeks. Huey's got a fight in the middle of September, I think the 14th. And then they're looking to match him on the hay bill on the 28th as well. He talked of possibly a fight with someone like Jamil McLean.
Interesting.
Yeah, I thought so.
Big time.
Yeah, I thought more interesting than one word answers anyway. But still, we can work
sorry,
on that.
Sorry, sorry.
We can work on that. You were miles away, weren't you?
Was he? I've forgotten what I even asked you.
This weekend we've got... Let's just leave it there then. This week we've got Thomas Adamek fighting Dominic Gwynn. We're back in the land of the big men now, which is...
Oh, wake me up.
We'll wake you up. So, Adamek and Gwynn. I mean, it's not really crossroads, because Gwynn's not really an up-and-comer anymore, and he never sort of fulfilled that potentially show when he absolutely clattered Michael Grant in Atlantic City a few years ago.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember when he beat Grant. And there was a lot of people thought that perhaps he could go on to win a world title at that point. But then he started to lose a few fights. I remember him being on ESPN Friday Night Fights quite a lot and losing these 10-rounders he shouldn't have been losing. And
beat Audley.
Although he did beat Audley. And that was, you know, kind of the... He's almost been like the American, or the more durable American equivalent of Audley. But he's got a nice style. He's got excellent boxing fundamentals. It wouldn't be a massive shock if Gwynn was to edge past Adamek on points. Wouldn't surprise me at all. Adamek, I think, largely underrated for what he's achieved if you go back through the years and what he's done through the weights. But I think he's certainly seen better days. And a fighter like that, when they've seen better days, very often the descent can be quite rapid. So I think a Gwynn... Certainly an underdog, but a live one, I would say.
Tell you what, cheeky fiver time. Gwynn, you can get a 9-1.
Just to win?
Yeah.
There it is. Bang it on that.
9-1. Adamek, 1-20 on, and 1-16 on. Gwynn, you can get 8s and 9s. Nines with Skybet, Bet Victor, Paddy Power, Corals, and Spreadex. And 8s with a few others. Skybet included. So yeah, 9-1.
It's long odds. I mean,
but Adamek's been right through the mill, hasn't he? He's been in some really rough fights, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. He has.
Always, even back down at light heavyweight.
Exactly, exactly. And I think really, he really is showing the signs now. He's showing the signs that he's not what he was. But, you know, if I had to put mortgage on it, then I would put, I'd put it on Adamek. Gwyn has never won a fight like this.
It's true.
Never, ever won a fight like
this. Apart from the Grant fight.
No, and he beat somebody recently or in about 3 or 4 years ago that he perhaps wasn't supposed to. Jan Berkman, was it? Blew him out in two rounds and kind of gave his gave his own career a bit of a lifeline in the process. But anyway, yeah, we've discussed this one enough.
Do you know who I'm looking forward to seeing on over the weekend? And that's Kermit Cintron, who's on ESPN. Cintron, one of my favourites since he took out Walter Matthysi. Do you remember that? Massive right hand.
Huge
right hand. And Cintron I like because I met him up at the International Boxing Hall of Fame a few years ago. And we actually had a really good chat about how he always wanted to be a wrestler. And he was a good wrestler in high school. And then he ended up just being completely open and frank about how he basically started just going to parties and living the party lifestyle. And then he sort of fell into boxing afterwards. And, you know, really interesting and frank conversation. But there's very little left in the life. And there's very little life left in the career of Kermit Cintron, isn't there?
I'm certain that he's not going to get anything close to when he was a world class. He was a titleist as well, and no, all the evidence suggests that he's past it. More so, there's more evidence there than there is for Adamek, who we were talking about before. Cintron has lost a few fights that he shouldn't have done recently. Like you say, he's a nice guy. I've spoke to him on the phone a few times.
It's not a competition, Matt.
No, you certainly know him better, Tris. You certainly know. He got on better with you, that's for sure.
When we talk about those days at summer camp, mate.
Yeah, nice guy. But I think this is the last time that... Well, I think this is the last time we're going to see him in getting that much coverage in boxing news in a preview.
Yeah. Just something that's caught my eye. Obviously, we flagged up last week that Nathan Cleverley was the underdog for his fight with Kovalev. Also on that bill, the underdog for his fight with Gary Buckland is Stephen Smith, who you can get at 3-1.
Yeah, it didn't surprise me that Stephen Smith's the underdog. I'm not saying that I'd pick against him. Buckland's been really impressive, hasn't he, recently? I think since he lost to John Murray.
Also been inactive, though, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. He has been inactive. But
then
I can
so
see
is
what
Stephen Smith.
Exactly.
Too.
I can see why he's the favourite. I mean, what Stephen Smith hasn't really...
3-1 is long odds for
it
someone.
Is.
Cause it's not... wouldn't say it's much beyond a 50-50 fight.
No. And also, think back to Stephen Smith's reputation before he went in with Lee Selby. And I think 95% of people thought Smith would handle Selby pretty easily. And now look what's happened to them both. They've completely gone off in opposite directions, haven't they?
It happens sometimes, doesn't it?
I know Smith had that good result against Ben Jones where he stopped him in the first round. But he hasn't had the kind of... He hasn't had that many rounds against testing opposition to set him up for Buckland. I think that's going to be his biggest disadvantage going into that.
I think he's 3-1 with Betfred. He's narrower with certain other places, including Stan James, Paddy Power, where they've got him 15-8.
Yeah.
5-2 with Spreadex. 9-4 at a couple of other places. So 3-1, definitely the best you can get. But I think he's coming in all the time. I'm sure I saw earlier in the week that there were some 4-1s kicking around on him. So it wouldn't surprise me if the bookies wise up to that one sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
Not a bad little double, though, if you're looking at a cheeky fiver double to go for Swifty Smith and Cleverley, both underdogs in those fights.
No, that's a good one. Yeah, that'd work. Wouldn't quite be like the bet that they pulled off in Coronation Street recently. Anyway, we won't go into that right now. But
okay. You can explain to me later, but yeah. Can always tell when you're in a relationship, Matt. So on a very, very different tack, we touched upon the sad deaths of Emile Griffith and Billy Smith last week. It's with a heavy heart. I made a very brief comment on Emile Griffith in the editor's letter this week, and indeed with Billy. But Emile, we were lucky enough for his biographer Ron Ross to write the obituary in the magazine this week, And it's a very, very moving account, isn't it? And it's very sad of how Griffith wound up in the last few years. Basically, after a homophobic attack, it was sort of all downhill for Emile, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's very sad, really, that something like that should happen to anyone. And the fact that it happened to Emile Griffith, who by all accounts was a true, true gentleman, is very sad indeed. And I think the good thing about this obituary that Ron Ross has done for us is that he obviously knew him very well and was very, very fond of him. And it's not just a kind of a look back on his career; it's a look back on one of boxing's most respected characters.
Yeah, definitely. On a slightly happier note, or much happier note, you were part of the panel this week for the big debate,
yeah,
where there was you, Bob Mee, Nigel Collins, and historian George Zeleny, all talking about the best and the worst of the heavyweight division over the years. Did you like being a part of that?
Yeah, I did. We spoke about this last week, didn't we? I was, it was good, excellent company to be in to talk about boxing, to talk about heavyweights, which is my favourite boxing
subject, as
everybody knows. Yeah, yeah.
But I was very surprised by some of your answers, I've got to say, particularly because I don't think there was reference to Bert Cooper in there. but the thing
he was nearly in there.
Who has been the division's most exciting fighter? I mean, you've gone for Tyson. I mean, come on.
Smoking Bert. Yeah,
think of those fights: Mercer, Mora, Holyfield.
Yeah, the Joe Hick one wasn't too bad either.
You can't change this now.
No, no, but I mean, look, I'm kind of latched onto the bottom. Everybody else has got more space than me, so I just had like one line.
the system manipulated the answers, did it?
Yeah.
Just said, I agree with the one above me. But there's some interesting stuff in there. But, which fight was the biggest letdown after a big build-up? Best fight that didn't happen? What was the most fun fight? Dream heavyweight fight? I mean, in here, you've gone for a dream heavyweight fight, or you actually haven't. You mentioned having a prize fighter style tournament, but cards on the table. If I'm going to be honest, I'll tell you the fight that fascinates me, that I'd love to see. In fact, there's several, but there's one that I think is perfect blend of styles: Joe Frazier, Rocky Marciano.
So it's a great fight. It's a great fight. I think we did that a while ago, didn't we, in the magazine?
Yeah,
but who we thought we would win. It is a really, really good fight. I'm not sure. Who would you pick to win that out of Marciano and Frazier?
Go for Marciano. It's one of those ones where he always finds a way to win. And I think maybe he takes Joe out in the second half of the fight.
Do you think he ever went in with anybody as skilled or as quick or as
no,
Joe
I think
Frazier?
There was a lot of stuff that Joe did that Marciano would have absolute nightmares with,
yeah,
particularly the pressure and the work rate. But then I just think Marciano just was happy to fight fire with fire. That's what he thrived on. And I think, all of the positives that Joe had, I think Marciano had the willpower and the wherewithal to sort of reflect them and use them against Joe to his detriment, and I think that's how it could go down.
Yeah, I think I can see why people might, why you'd favour Marciano. I mean, Frazier, I mean, I think his punch resistance is unfairly criticised due to the George Foreman fight, but it wasn't his strongest. It wasn't his strongest point, was it? I mean, we go back and we look at his fight against Oscar Bonavina, who gave him nightmares, and I think you could say that Oscar Bonavina giving Joe Frazier nightmares, it's certainly fair to say that Rocky Marciano would go one further and beat him.
Okay, so just in closing, Matt, give me a dream fight, a heavyweight fight.
Yeah, Muhammad Ali, Joe Lewis. That's a dream fight, isn't it? I'm not saying it would be the best fight in terms of entertainment. It probably wouldn't even be fight of the year, but in terms of the build-up to it, and most historians, most writers, most fans would agree that coming up one and two, depending on your preference, of all-time heavyweight is going to be Joe Lewis and Muhammad Ali. Put those two in a ring, both at their peak, and then we've got an answer to who's the best of all time.
Where would your money go?
It's
cheeky five a time.
Cheeky four. Oh gosh, I mean, I think the odds would be so short, we'd have to be doing cheeky 50s to make any kind of money back. But I think I would pick... I'd probably pick Ali, but it's one of those that's so difficult. I mean, Lewis, I think, would stylistically, even for a peak Ali, who certainly wasn't untouchable, I think Lewis has got all the ingredients to really give Ali some serious, serious trouble.
Yeah, I think you're right. So, a happier ending this week to where we were from last week. The magazine's now available to download digitally and on the newsstands. So go out and grab a copy. We'd be interested to hear your responses. I'm also looking to do a giveaway this week. So if you just tweet us at Boxing News Ed and put a hashtag podcast at the end, then I'll see if I can find something to send you out, and we'll do a giveaway. So let's see what we've got in our cupboards. But Matt, it's been a pleasure as always.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you.
And we've got a lot of interesting stuff coming up over the next week. So we look forward to speaking to you guys again next week.